This is E.B. Cotenord, and you're listening to the Triple Existential Podcast.
Whores and housewives. The door closes behind me. I sit down next to him and I try to gauge where he is on the excitement continuum. On one end, we have anxiety. On the other, anticipation. We talk about the weather, the room, the space, our days, and even the upholstery on the couch. I laugh at my own jokes and I hope he gets them. The clock ticks away and I hope he's not thinking about it. His fingers run through my hair before I tie it up. Buttons are unbuttoned, zippers unzipped, lips brush and press into each other and then pull away to find other parts to explore. There's spit and sweat and lube. It's sticky and slippery and everything is wet. My lipstick, perfectly applied 15 minutes ago, finds itself smudged into the crevice of my thigh. My mascara is smeared down my cheek and onto his chest. This is why we're here. I harbor no delusions about my job. I'm present, I'm engaged. I'm fully immersed in the moment and in the fantasy. I'm here to offer what he needs and I'm here to do what he wants. And I'm here to figure that out for him if he's unsure or not ready to confess his desires to me. He finishes on my face and I close my lips so I don't get any in my mouth. And I keep my eyes open, praying they don't get splashed. I go get a warm washcloth for him. While I'm waiting for the water to warm up, I tidy up my face. We lie in bed and chat, we joke. He asks me personal questions, and I answer them, since I have yet to figure out how to dodge the question or create a convincing backstory that I can remember in a post-orgasmic daze. Maybe we go again. Maybe he showers and leaves. Maybe I'm at his place, and it's time for me to pack up and disappear from his room and his life. I don't like to think I have a script, but there's a format, a structure, a general guideline. It's a template. I can deviate from it and so can he, but that's generally how it goes down. There's not much to it when I put it on paper, it's not so complicated. But syncing up my emotional and physical energy to meet a stranger's needs without considering or compromising my own is. I don't concern myself with my skills as a professional fucktoy. I'm good at it. It's a skill I'm confident in. You're good at your job. I've seen it. You're really good at it, my husband once told me while I was getting ready for an appointment. I wasn't sure if it was an accolade or an accusation. You make men come. He sat on the couch in his gym shorts and a t-shirt. I stood in front of him in heels and a mini dress, wondering if I looked presentable. He stared me straight in the eyes in a way he never did before I was a whore, his hand reaching towards his crotch. I stood almost 6 feet tall in my heels and at least 6 feet away, but I felt tiny and close, like I was barely as high as his knees, standing right at his feet and staring up at his face. He resented that I was good at what I do, and he was excited by it. And he resented that he was excited by it. He wanted me to know that I should feel ashamed of how I make him feel. But I wasn't ashamed. I was sad. I was sad that he didn't understand that my job is more than getting a load on my face and then walking out with an envelope full of cash. But as sad as I felt, I mostly was uncomfortable. To have a man that I had given my entire adult life to, who had seen me through my best and my worst, who had supported me through my darkest moments, and the man I had supported in return, to have that man undress me in his mind, leaving my clothes on but removing my humanity, that hurt. I wasn't ashamed, but I didn't want to be in my skin either. Similar moments found their way into my living room, kitchen, bedroom, car, and phone over the next few years. They were occasional enough that they seemed worth forgiving, but not occasional enough that they didn't undermine my ability to feel like I was safe in my home, Not that I was afraid of him, but I was afraid of the ways my work hurt him. In the years since, I've learned there's nothing to be gained by attempting to lay blame for the feelings my husband and I felt. I'm not willing to admonish him for feeling the way he did, but I'm not going to blame myself for the way he chose to treat me. On an almost daily basis, I find myself entangled in ecstasy with men who are all but strangers. We connect, we bond, we have jokes. They regale me with tales of their work and their lives, and I respond with thoughts on life and love and the human condition. We have moments together, hours, entire nights. Ourselves and our realities are completely immersed in one another. Nothing else matters. We're alone and experiencing and learning and exploring what it means to lay it all bare for each other. But I know there's a part of them that is like that part of my husband. That part where they're a little disappointed they're with me. Not because it's me, but because of what I represent. Because of what it means that I ended up in their lives at all. The crevices of their brain are stained with stigma like grout that can't be scraped clean. Every part of me worthy of appreciation doubles as a point of contempt. I'm beautiful. I'm intelligent. I'm kind. My laughter is infectious and my touch is addictive. To want that, to seek that, and to experience it is to regret it later. Men who are enamored with who I am and what I offer are disappointed in me for becoming a whore. I could have been, should have been, something better, something more. How did I end up here? Why aren't I doing something worthy? Why instead am I here putting on a show and leading them on, taking their money by being charming and inviting them inside my body? I touch them and they feel wanted and loved because I want them to, because they deserve to. And I want them to carry that with them when they leave. I want them to go out into the world and believe they are worth loving and worth touching. I want them to feel my friendship, my kindness. I want our chemistry to feel as real as it is. I want them to know I'm here, reading them, and doing what I can to give them every good thing that is within my power and the constraints of my clock to give. But I do it knowing full well that I am the dirtiest secret they have. I do it knowing that when the door closes between us, and while I'm depositing my cash into the ATM, their biggest fear is anyone ever finding out that they know of my existence at all. I'm exactly the kind of woman they enjoy and exactly what they want, but not the kind of woman they would speak kindly of or defend in polite company. They leave their homes wishing their wives were more like me and return home grateful that they're not. The measure of their successes and failures as fathers is whether their daughters end up like me. They wonder if my parents know what I do, if my children know, if my partner knows. They can't imagine knowing what I do and looking at my face every day and still loving me. I'm lovable by the hour, no doubt. I'm lovable in fantasy. I'm lovable as an escape from reality. But as a woman who goes back to her family when it's over, as a woman who makes lunches and does homework and naps after her first coffee in the morning, they make up for it in generosity. I think that's the difference between the man who knew me as a wife and then as a whore, and the man who only ever knew me as a whore. He hated me for becoming what he never wanted his wife to be, but also what he always wanted his wife to be. And I felt it. I felt it every moment in the home that I built with him. The men who shopped for my body off the internet never wanted me to be a wife. They hoped I never would be. They pay me not to try. And I respect that. I'm not a person they want in their real lives. And that's okay. We have an agreement. And I proposed that very arrangement by setting a price. as much as they could love me, they would never want someone like me in their space. But they treat me well, and I never, ever feel like a whore when I'm with them. They're careful that I never do. I don't need men to think highly of me when they're not around me. I don't need their approval. I just need them to respect me when they're in my presence. Whether they're with me because they hired me or married me, they choose to invest their time and their money in me. They can hate me for being a whore. I can be loved for an hour by someone who hates the reality of my existence, but I refuse to allow them in my home, and I won't be married to one. So I'm not.
Yo, 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 it's Charlie, and this is Evie.
Hey, yeah. It's Evie.
Yeah. You know, obviously I read your pieces before you record them, and I do a lot of editing for you. Not that you need very much. I mean, like, it's more like I, like, make some minor adjustments and go, this is really good.
I mean you most... only rewrote, like, 6 pages of that.
I didn't rewrite anything.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, okay. I'm not just your production engineer, I'm also your hired sycophant. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually just really good. So, but this one was like one of those pieces that I read, and you have a number of them that I read, and they affect me, like, really emotionally. And so, like, you know, we talked before we got started where I was just kind of like, you know, what was, you know, what inspired this? What, and I think you should kind of share that, like, what kicked this piece off?
So the thing that I was thinking about when I started this piece, and it sort of went in many directions from there, was, you know, I was thinking about how, you know, I spend this really intimate and vulnerable time with these men who I overwhelmingly think highly of and who I have a really great connection with and who, you know, enjoy their time with me and who appreciate me as a person. And, you know, like I say in the piece, like, I never feel like a whore when I'm at work. I feel appreciated and cared for and, you know, sexy and beautiful and intelligent. You know, I have, but there's this reality that I also know that, you know, I'm the dirty secret and that there's a disdain for women like me and that, you know, if they're at a party and somebody's making a joke about, you know, dead hookers, like, I'm not going to be defended in that moment. And they're not going to speak highly of sex workers when they're talking to their friends. I'm not an acceptable person to know. Mm-hmm. Even though we have these connections that are deep and sometimes they're, you know, really profound connections, when they leave, I'm not a person that they would ever want in their lives. You know, if we met socially, I wouldn't be welcome. I mean, to say that it doesn't hurt would be a lie, but it's also a reality that I was never naive to. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't come into sex work thinking that, you know, I was doing this to, you know, gain respect from my peers or, you know, so the fact that I'm not, you know, my work isn't highly regarded in, you know, polite society is, you know, something that, you know, I'm aware and I wasn't like blindsided by that. And it's like, it's okay with me as somebody providing this service, like as a sex worker, I go in and it's, a, you know, it's okay. But in the big picture of society, like it's not okay. And it's angering and it's infuriating because, you know, we are people and we are people who, until you know what we do,
would be considered worthy and intelligent and fun and, you know, people that you could have in your life. But because of how we make our money, we're not.
That seems to be kind of a tragedy of sort of like how people, I'm going to make a horrible generalization, which I, you know, tend to try to avoid, but it seems to be the tragedy generally, and one of the motivations for doing this podcast even, was that people tend to engage with sex workers through all of these preconceptions and almost never engage with their reality. It's like either the fantasy, either this negative fantasy, or this sexualized fantasy, or this horror story, or all of these other things, but it's not you. It's not your human you. It's not, like, the totality of you.
No. Yeah, like, one, you know, outside of, you know, I feel like clients get, you know, get to have the fantasy of me, because, like, one, that's what they're paying for.
For sure, for sure.
So, like, if they don't want to take my humanity with them when they leave, like, that's entirely, it's an entirely reasonable thing, and it's valid. And, but, you know, it was really interesting dating as a sex worker, and as a sex worker who's completely out and, you know, public about it. You know, these ideas of, you know, what is going to be expected in a relationship from me. And, you know, there's definitely this idea that, like, I'm going to come home from, like, work, and I'm going to be, like, an insatiable fuckbot who's just, like, going through, like, bottles and bottles of lube, like, on a daily basis, because, like, I cannot get enough sex. And, you know, really, the reality is, like, hey, can I have a shower and, like, an ice pack for my butthole? You know?
I feel like this is the point at which full disclosure might actually be the point where it comes in. True life facts about dating a sex worker.
But, like, yeah, I mean, I had, and it's since, I don't know where it went, because it's since been lost, which is just another, like, weird thing about, you know, living with a sex worker, but, you know, keeping, like, condoms frozen, like, filled with, you know, maybe, like, water balloons out of them, and, like, freeze them, because they, like, make, like, really good ice packs, because they fit, like, right into the cracks where you need them to fit. And, like, somehow they're lost. Like, I don't have those. Or maybe, aww, or maybe they're, like, I don't know, have you seen them in the, you would have seen them in the freezer.
No, I didn't see them in the freezer.
So they're not in the freezer. No, your
condom butt plug ice packs, yeah, were not in the freezer. Someone else threw those out. I would not have thrown them out. I've been like, this is a thing. Though, granted, knowing our house, someone might have thrown them as water balloons in the shower.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
Boring.
It is boring. It's boring,
which we, you know, was very thoroughly covered on the
and the Mother's Day
podcast. On the Mother's Day special.
No, but, like, you know, sometimes, most of the time, all the time, when I get home, like, there is a part of me that just wants to be like, okay, I need time to, like, not be, you know, this sexualized persona, and I just need to take off, like, you know, this, like, attractive, sexy skin. You know, it's like, I need to, like, take that part off of me and, like, hang it up and, like, shower and just, you know, not be, and just, like, not be sexualized and just, like, feel, like, really human and, mm-hmm. You know, appreciate, like, you know, I mean, you know, romantic loving affection, but, like, this, you know, I need, like, a humanizing touch. I need to feel appreciated for, like, who I am and not, you know, the fact that, like, I can soak your bed sheets when I get my butt fucked. Like, you know, which, I mean, there's an, I appreciate that that's appreciated, but sometimes when I come home from work, I need to be something that I'm not at work, which I think we all need.
Yeah, I mean, okay, not the same, but I, you know, it makes sense to me in this kind of context. I mean, I was a chef. Mm-hmm. And no one believes me, but when I was a chef, I never ate.
Yeah.
I didn't cook for myself. In fact, being a chef kind of broke that for me. Like, I'm not capable of cooking for myself to this day. Like, I cook for other people.
Hmm? Yeah, you don't.
I don't cook for myself.
You don't.
I really can't. And in fact, I'll forget to eat for long periods of time because it's just not that interesting to me. And I'd love to cook. I think it's great. But I don't like it in the same way anymore because it was professionalized in this way that makes it really difficult. Now, here's where it is different, is that, like, I do think to a certain extent, like, you spend all of this time, like, and you are so dialed into other people's needs, like the needs of your client, and, like, you know, like, you've described it this way. You know, I wouldn't say, I'm not using these words. These are words you've used. It's like, you're really, you've said obsessed, I would say dedicated, but you're really into your work. Mm-hmm. You're really into your work, and that's something that I completely respect as someone who is very into their work. I mean, you don't become a chef if you can't stand the thought of having an all-consuming passion, you know? And I think that there's something really laudable about, like, having a vocation. Especially since I know that you have, you know, clients who have expressed, like, really deep gratitude. Like, the experiences they've had with you, like, how that's really helped them, you know, sort shit out about themselves and, like, what they're into and all this kind of stuff. And also just, you know, at the same time, you know, you've had clients who've been in positions to make substantive positive changes for people in your field, and they don't, but they still see you, or, like, what you do is acceptable in a particular context, but not another.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think the most interesting thing about, like, the stigma is, and this is, like, something that was really surprising to me when I first started escorting, is realizing that there is no demographic of client other than men. Like, there's no type of man who is, you know, we have this idea of, like, what a John looks like, and, mm-hmm. you know, and there isn't a type, you know, it's all men, it's all walks of life. It's, you know, besides being male and, mm-hmm. you know, obviously for me, like, heterosexual male, and occasionally, you know, there's a bicurious bisexual, you know, plausible deniability. But, like, you know, I mean, it's mostly, it's straight men. You wouldn't be able to pick them out as, like, that guy sees hookers, that guy doesn't. Like, you know, it's your priest collecting the envelopes. It's your lawyer. It's, it's teachers, it's principals, it's nonprofit, you know, presidents. It's, you know, it's everybody. And, you know, and so to have this stigma of the kind, you know, you don't want to be thought of as the kind of guy who would do that. The kind of guy that would do that is a guy, you know, it's so normal. It's such a normal guy thing to do. And I'm not saying that the majority of men do it, but you wouldn't know by, like, looking at mm-hmm. the diversity of my client list. You know, it's every type of man would be. My target demographic is just straight guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And, you know, every 18 to, like, as long as they're, like, 18 and still 18 or over and still alive.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's
Between 18 and not dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interested in women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Preferably butt stuff.
I mean, for me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I definitely, like, have guys that see me that are like, oh, no, I'm not into that. And I'm like, what are you doing here?
You came to the wrong empress.
And you came to the wrong hole, my friend.
That's, like, my whole thing.
Should we, like, wrap this up? Because I don't think we're making sense anymore.
Nope.
I don't think anybody's listening to us.
We're not listening to us either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Address the name change really quick.
Oh, yeah. So, the first three episodes of this podcast were called Laid Bare. And,
Whoopsie.
So, Charlie and I somehow both managed to not do, like, any kind of, like, due diligence on that. And it turns out there is already another Laid Bare podcast that is about sex and sexuality. And it's not actually that similar to this one, but...
it's real popular.
It's real popular. And, oh my gosh, I really, really, really upset a lot of people by stealing, the name of this podcast. And yeah, they were really upset and understandably so. And I feel like super dumb because it's not the kind of mistake either one of us would normally make, but like COVID brain. And, like, huge apologies to the Laid Bare podcast.
For giant whoops.
Huge.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I feel bad. It wasn't, it wasn't my proudest moment. And apologies to, like, the listeners, because I know that they are huge, I mean, they are very loyal and loving and, like, they're huge fans of the podcast and... I apologize for confusion that I caused any of them. But the woman who does run that podcast was very kind to me and was like, hey, I've been building this show for 4 years and she has like 185,000 Twitter followers. And she's like, could you maybe like not? And I was like, oh,
obviously. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm not even doing myself any favors by making my podcast, like, unfindable by the, you know, dozens of people that might be searching for it.
The five people, two of which live here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But Jake from State Farm would be, like, really happy to know that, like, if any of his friends are, like, looking for the podcast, they're just going to find this, like, woman in London... like running this, like, yeah, that's my mom. She's so, yeah, huge apology. So we're renaming the podcast. Okay, so you know now, and if you're like, I thought this was Laid Bare with EB Goodnord, it's not. It was, and that was a huge mistake. So I'm owning that, and we are putting Laid Bare to rest, and we are now a podcast of a new name. Yeah, so thanks for listening to Laid Bare when it existed, and now thanks for listening to this.
To whatever the fuck this is, yeah.
And also, if you follow me on Twitter, when I post the link to this episode, if you comment about your favorite moment from this episode underneath my in my post about this, just be like, the thing I loved about this episode was... that your husband was complicated. and then I will pick somebody from those comments to receive 1 week free of my OnlyFans, where you get to see... Da-da-da. Yeah, so I'm basically giving you free porn for listening to my free podcast. Good night.
Thank you for listening. And join me, EB Kotenord, next week for another episode of the Triple Existential Podcast.